The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report, and we are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I believe we have an interesting show for you today. I believe that every day, so perhaps perhaps I'm biased. We're anticipating talking to Eric Kingston, professor of social work at Syracuse University, on his involvement with Social Security Works and StrengthenSocialSecurity.org. People are ratcheting up for this potential battle. I hope I'm wrong. I received an email from a listener yesterday in response to my email blast saying, I'm tired of the Obama bashing. And I said, look, nobody wants to believe that Obama is not going to put Social Security cuts on the table more than I. But I'm sorry, we just have not been given any indication that he's going to do anything differently. And better safe than sorry. And later in this program, I will also read a portion from the Creationist Museum book that was given to me by my brother-in-law. That unnamed segment will be coming up later in the program. News from Don Siegelman. People asked me for an update recently. Today, he will be appearing, I believe, in the 11th Circuit hearing to see if his case will be dismissed. You can go to donsiegelman.org for more information and to contribute to his legal defense fund. And tomorrow I'll give you an update on that. Ken Conrad, North Dakota Democratic Senator Ken Conrad, announced yesterday that he will not seek re-election, creating a potentially prime pickup opportunity for Republicans in a GOP-leaning state. He very well was one of the guys, I think, that was a potential pickup for Republicans anyways, so I'm not sure that makes a big difference. We shall see. He is... he wanted to focus his attention on cutting Social Security, I think, and spending his time as a bond vigilante, worrying about the deficit. Not the biggest problem. The biggest problem we have is 9.7% unemployment. That's the biggest problem we have. Not for Ken Conrad, because I'm sure he'll become some type of lobbyist, or some such, after he leaves the Senate. But it is for a lot of other Americans. And ladies and gentlemen, I know many of you have tuned in today for my reaction to this next story. Dorsey's already smirking. He knows what I'm referring to. Ladies and gentlemen, for the better part of 10, 12 years, I have had a bete noire, even before I had any type of platform for which to express it. And it is with a mixture of sadness. No, wait, so let me restate that. It's a mixture of glee and euphoria, I guess. And self-congratulatory excitement. It's a mixture of glee, euphoria, self-congratulatory excitement, and just a touch of sentimentality and a slight anxiety that a bad situationist may not be relevant anymore. Who am I kidding? It was not relevant for a long time. Then I announce to you that it has been reported, though not absolutely confirmed, the official announcement coming today, that Senator Joe Lieberman will not run for re-election in 2012. These are tears. Tears of joy. Tears nonetheless. Nonetheless? Don't turn that music down. Don't turn that music down. And you know, I actually went out and hired this entire orchestra for this very moment. We recorded it last night after reports came in. Took a very brief course on how to conduct an orchestra. And that's actually me playing one of the big drums in the background. There you go. Joe Lieberman, maybe I should save this for the official announcement, but maybe I shouldn't. Joe Lieberman leaving the Senate, I'm sure. You know what we should do? We could, for the next 2 years, have like an ongoing pool or guessing game as to which insurance company he will become a lobbyist for. What corporate interest will he be shilling for? It's really only... The only real question is, ultimately, will this knock Lanny Davis off his pedestal of being the biggest whore in Washington? That's really the only real question. He has plans to announce today, maybe just... You know what's not inconceivable, frankly, is the excitement expressed by the left may just cause him to change his mind. The man is so petty, has made so many major policy decisions based on the most pettiness of, like the Medicare buy-in. Here's a guy who championed that for years, and he floats it, or it's floated, he sees that the left wants it, and he's like, no. Because I'm mad that people dared to run against me. You know what's wonderful? The notion that Joe Lieberman had to look himself in the mirror, talk to his shilling, anti-Semitism-baiting advisors, and say, do I have a chance to win this election? And they all looked at him and hemmed and hawed and said no. And he said, how is that possible? And they just said, no. And he looked at himself in the mirror, is it possible? No. And he had to finally come to grips with the idea that no. 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 That makes me feel so good. But who knows? Maybe he'll announce today. God knows what he's going to do for the next 2 years, now that he has no hope of winning election. It's going to be interesting to see, here's my guess. Any chance he has to vote in such a way that could enhance his opportunity to get paid, you will see it. Nobody in the Senate, well, maybe John McCain. I should be fair. Nobody is as nakedly self-serving as Joe Lieberman, but maybe John McCain.
That's why they get along together so well.
Absolutely. They both found a way, like, hey, we can be, how can we sit as close to the fulcrum of the Senate as possible? What's it going to take? What's it going to take for us to put ourselves in a position where we will have power and prestige, and the reporters will come running to us. The odd thing, and, you know, Connecticut's a blue state, but there's talk that Linda McMahon, the woman who made so much money based upon her company's encouraging the use of steroids, and maybe not explicitly, maybe not directly, in such a way that one could get sued for saying so. But certainly there was an implicit incentive structure set up for people who use steroids for her company. You know, I could say, hey, to my employees, whoever comes in here and acts out the most freaked out and sort of like paranoid or has munchies or does something that like really is bizarre, but in such a way that they're, you know, seem to be uncontrollable. And then I express shock that people would come into my office high. What? No! So Linda McMahon is going to be running. She has so much money and so much wants to gain the legitimacy of public service, you know, to offset her wrestling career. It would have been easier for one of the three anticipated challengers to Lieberman to win in a general election against McMahon, Lieberman, and a Democrat. But, you know, we shall see, and maybe we'll have some of these people who will be running in Connecticut, because I would like to see that state. I would like to see a real solid progressive come out of there. So we have a net pickup from Joe Lieberman. And let's just touch on this. Let's play this clip from Harry Reid. This was from, over a week ago on Meet the Press.
Last weekend.
And it's very impressive. Again, maybe it's getting boring for you, but I am. I want you people to have such glibness, such awareness of Social Security, so that if there is an attempt to cut it, you will be able to respond very quickly to those around you. And frankly, you know, I hear from people who are producers of shows, and they know that I'm a Social Security jihadist, and it is helpful because it changes the tone of some of the shows that they produce to hear this stuff. So here's Harry Reid, what I think is the best Democratic response I've heard from a Democratic elected leader, at least in the Senate, on Social Security in a long time.
Let's be specific, though. Social Security, how does it have to change? What they put on the agenda is raising the retirement age, maybe means testing, benefits. Is it time for Social Security to fundamentally change if you're going to deal with the debt
problem? One of the things that always troubles me is when we start talking about the debt, the first thing people do is run to Social Security. Social Security is a program that works, and it's going to be, it's fully funded for the next 40 years. Stop picking on Social Security. There are a lot of places...
Senator, are you really saying the arithmetic on Social Security works?
I'm saying the arithmetic on Social Security works. I have no doubt it does.
It's not in crisis.
No, it's not in crisis. This is something that's perpetuated by people who don't like government. Social Security is fine. Are there things we can do to improve Social Security? Of course.
Means testing, raising the retirement age? Do you agree with either of those?
I'm not going to go to any of those backdoor methods to whack Social Security recipients. I'm not going to do that. We have a lot of things we can do with this debt that's a problem. But one of the places where I'm not going to be part of picking on is Social Security.
There you have it. And that's exactly the response you should be giving. Democracy Corps released a new poll in anticipation of the impending assault against Social Security, according to Digby. And it turns out that Washington is once again focused on the wrong problems. Which of the two following do you think are most important economic problems facing the country right now? High unemployment, 41%. Outsourcing of jobs, 33%. The budget deficit is big and growing, 23%. Wages and salaries, 18%. Taxes are too high, 15%. Darcy! Government's focused on bank bailouts and not in the middle and not the middle class, 14%. And what should government concentrate? The question is, now I'm going to give you a list of issues. I would like to you to please tell me which two should be top priorities for the new Congress. One, economic recovery and new jobs, 46%. Protecting Social Security and Medicare, 34%. So new jobs and economic recovery, protecting Social Security, 34%. Making sure that our children receive education for these times, 27%. Cutting spending and the size of government comes in at number four with 25%. Repealing health care law, 17% at the end of reducing federal budget, 15%. Nobody cares about what it seems our entire government is focused upon. And we just heard from a leading economist yesterday that the public has it right. We shouldn't be worried about those things. I have a lot of stories today, and you know what it's time for, folks. It is time for our unnamed... Well, wait a sec. First, I should do this story. Because it has been reported in Huffington Post that in Greece, archaeologists on the island of Crete have discovered what may be evidence of one of the world's first sea voyages by human ancestors. A ministry statement said that experts from Greece and U.S. have found rough axes and other tools thought to be between 130 and 700,000 years old.
Wow. Hey, what happened?
Now, of course, folks, you realize this is all propaganda by those pro-science people. And the Greece is obviously lying about this to increase their tourism. Because nobody wants to go to Greece for the sun, the topless beaches, the ouzo, the breaking the plates on people's heads when they dance around, all the ruins. Nobody wants to go there for that. The minister, the tourism ministry obviously conspires with people who want to pretend like they're archaeologists to pretend that they found rough axes and other tools that are 130 to 700,000 years old. And of course it's a fraud. We all know that it can't be possible to have tools that are 130,000 years old. The earth is only 6 to 10,000 years old. This is fraud. This is fraud so that people go and visit Greece or Crete because they would never go there anywhere. As for the beaches, pff, whatever. It's always, honey, grab the kids. Or, hey, Jorge, let's go down from Sweden to go to Crete because they have old axes there. Will we be able to see them? No. Of course not. They're in a museum or they're kept because we want to be protected. But just the knowledge. That's why Greece announces this. They fabricate this stuff. Well, then, let's go to the Creation Museum to find out the truth. Freaking horrible accent. I don't even know what I'm doing there. It's like Czechoslovakia. It's like that Steve Martin, wild and crazy guys. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing my ability to do. I had dinner last weekend with a very nice couple. And, well, I can't even remember what I was having the argument with. The guy's sort of like a libertarian, conservative guy. And we were talking about global warming. And I said, will you, you know, it is accepted even on the right now that global warming actually happens. But it's actually happening. I mean, to the extent that there is, the right wing is lying about anything, it's simply about whether or not it's man-made. And he goes, you know, I think the reason why people who, you know, I think it's the attitude of liberals like yourself why people don't accept global warming. And I'm like, what? You're telling me that because I'm obnoxious, you're going to ignore what the vast majority of scientists say? Like, that's your rationale. Sam Cedar's obnoxious, so I'm going to ignore science. I mean, I've gotten this before, honestly. I mean, I've gotten, you know, like, maybe if liberals weren't so, you know, snotty, people would accept that the world is older than 10,000 years old. Pardon me? Your acceptance of science is based upon my not being a douchebag? Wow.
It always seems like libertarians are the most smug of them all, too. You know? It's
of course. Are you kidding? Of course. Of course they are. They have to. Because libertarians are just... There is no real libertarian philosophy. It's just sort of arbitrary. I mean... There you can find streaks of libertarianism in on the left too. It's live and let live, but where the rubber meets the road is, okay, well, we agree that we need to live in a society, right? I mean, you're not saying abolish government, and there are some things that you think the government should be doing that's not in the Constitution explicitly, like almost all of it. So where do you draw the line? It basically comes down to at a point where I can pay 40% less taxes and still get the services I want. And still have the buses run on time in Aspen. You know?
And we liberals live in this fantasy world.
Yes!
Dreamland.
Why don't you just live and let live? Have some tolerance. And, you know... The funny thing is that we've had just years and years of conservatives talking about the moral equivalency of liberals. And now we're supposed to accept from conservatives the scientific equivalency. Which brings us to the chapter on and the section of the Creationist Museum entitled Dinosaur Den. Try that again. What's going on? Okay. I shall read from The Journey Through the Creation Museum with Handel's Messiah playing in the background. A dinosaur exhibit. An arched doorway leads into a two-story life-size dinosaur exhibit. Signs take guests. Guests. Chronologically through a biblical explanation of dinosaurs. And the dinosaur models are guaranteed to fascinate everyone. From dinosaur eggs to the skeleton of Triceratops. To the massive T-Rex looming large above the visitors. It's a great area for a family photo. And an important perspective on seeing dinosaurs not as products of millions of years, but as part of a created world only thousands of years old. That's right. The notion that the idea of millions of years is offensive because, of course, there can't be millions of years. That's an oxymoron because life and world and everything has only exist for half a dozen thousand years. And then you walk into the Dragon Hall Gift and Bookstore. An animatronic Patadronin stands guard above the entrance to the museum's bookstore. Themed after a medieval castle's great hall and complete with dragon sculptures and stained glass windows depicting dragon legends. Guests are reminded once again that the dragon legends possibly could have been dinosaurs. The image of St. George's battle with a quote-unquote dragon decorates one of the walls of Dragon Hall Bookstore. Legend states that strong of faith and therefore fearless, he battled the beast to save the king's daughter and then offered to kill the beast if the townspeople would convert to Christianity, which legends also say they did. And then finally into Noah's Cafe. Museum visitors relax in a pleasant Noah's Ark theme environment and enjoy quality food at reasonable prices. Sandwiches or daily hot entrees, grilled food, hot dogs, ice cream, and more. Oh, my God, they're eating
the animals from Noah's Ark. Oh, no.
Other dining options at the Creation Museum include the Lakeside Grill, looking out over the beautifully landscaped grounds, the Plaza Cafe, or the Burrito Bar, both located in Palm Plaza. So there you have it today, folks. That is the reading from the Creation Museum. Hope you enjoyed. What are you looking at me? Why are you looking at me, Evan? What's wrong? What's wrong with everything? So, folks, there it is. Can you believe they would eat meat in the Noah's Ark? That's so rude.
At least take it outside.
You want a 2x2 burger? Would you like some... Hi, welcome to the Creation... Welcome to Noah's Restaurant. Would you like the special 2x2 burger? So, yesterday, I think I briefly mentioned this story, but the National Labor Relations Board announced on Friday that it's planning to sue the states of Arizona, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Utah in an effort to invalidate recently approved state constitutional amendments that prohibit private sector workers from choosing a union through a process known as card check. The Labor Board asserts that the amendments conflict with federal laws and are preempted by those laws. These amendments were placed on the ballot and promoted by conservative groups because they were afraid that congressional Democrats and Obama would enact legislation allowing unions to insist on using a card check in which an employer recognizes a union as soon as a majority of workers sign pro-union cards. That method makes it possible. So, in other words, this is what EFCA was. Didn't happen. Don't think it has a chance of happening now. It would protect a union's right if a majority of workers decided they wanted a union by signing essentially a petition, okay? Now, and as it stands now, employers can force secret ballots be used when unions are trying to organize. So in other words, there's very few opportunities that unions have to create a union in a workplace when it's simply a majority of workers say they want it. There needs to be, because then the employers can basically file to have a secret ballot and then start holding pre-election meetings where they can bar union representatives from their grounds. They can have instructional, educational meetings for their workers. They can begin to punish union agitators. Now, the right would say, look, by not having a secret ballot, your union crony buddies may influence your votes. Well, I guess that's possible. But who has more sway with workers, would you say? Would you say it's the people who pay them? Or would you say it's your coworkers? I mean, just, you know, just in general.
I do whatever Dorsey tells me.
Right. I mean, think about it at your own place of work. Yes, you may trust your fellow workers, but when push comes to shove, if your fellow, hey, Don, why don't you get some, would you please keep the coffee machine on? And your boss comes in, I want the coffee machine off. What's going to happen the next day? So this basically evens the playing field. And the four states requiring the use of secret ballot elections when workers are deciding whether to unionize, even though the federal law makes card check an option, as opposed to making card check the sort of premier option, to have a sort of a default card check situation. If union workers decided, okay, you're trying to sign up for card check, we want a private vote, then they could have a private vote. But now employers can force a private vote. So federal government is fighting that. Good for them. But what are the stakes here involved? There's been a lot written about the demise of unions. David Leinhart, in the New York Times has a piece today. Alone among the world's economic powers, the United States is suffering through a deep job slump that cannot be explained by the rest of the economy's performance. Now, as an addendum to this piece, I want to keep in mind that Krugman and other Nobel Prize-winning economists have said that they do not think that there is a structural problem with our economy in terms of jobs. And by structural, they mean that the need for certain jobs has changed so dramatically that we have a workforce that is not suited for the work opportunities that exist. He said, if that was the case, you would see some sectors of employment not suffering like other sectors, but there is no evidence that there are certain sectors that are actually doing significantly better than other sectors. You know, short of like maybe care for the elderly or health care. So he goes on, Leinhart, to say the gross domestic product here, the total value of all goods and services. And you should all know that any economic activity essentially becomes a measure of gross domestic product. There's been arguments in the past that we should be also calculating the gross domestic product in terms of we should be including the depletion of natural resources or the depletion of worker productivity. Now, if somebody actually breaks into my house, steals my shit, it will increase the GDP because I will go out, buy more shit. I will go out and maybe buy an alarm system. But what is not measured is how much time do I take off from work? What is the loss in wages? The pain in the ass and actually have to, the time spent in getting this stuff. You know, their GDP is just straight on economic activity, not cost, not opportunity cost, not cost to humans. If we chop down a bunch of trees, GDP goes up because we sell those trees for paper or wood products or whatever we use it for. But what is not calculated is the cost to the environment. Who picks up that cost? Who picks up the cost of any pollution that comes from, et cetera, et cetera. There was a movement back in the early 90s to change the calculus of that, but that was, of course, quashed. So the GDP has recovered from the recession better than in Britain, Germany, Japan, or Russia. Yet a greatly shrunken group of American workers working harder and more efficiently is producing these goods and services. The unemployment rate is higher in this country than in Britain or Russia and much higher than in Germany or Japan. Jobless rate is also higher than China's. European countries with worse unemployment with the United States tend to be those still mired in crisis, like Greece, Ireland, and Spain. United States has a now possible reasons. The United States had a bigger housing bubble than most countries, leaving a large group of idle construction workers who can't easily switch industries, but that doesn't explain it. Many businesses, meanwhile, are reluctant to commit to hiring workers out of a fear that heavily indebted households won't spend much in coming years. In other words, it's not a question of, if we had tax breaks, we'd hire more people. No, they're worried about demand. They're worried about demand. They're worried that people aren't going to buy their products. This jobless recovery is the third straight recovery since 1991 to begin with months and months of little job growth. Why? One obvious possibility is the balance of power between employers and employees. Relative to the situation in most countries, or in this country for most of the last century, American employers operate with few restraints. They've been deregulated. Workers have lost rights. Unions have withered, particularly in the private sector. 7% now, I think we're down to. And courts have grown friendlier to business. I wonder how that happened. Because even whether you're talking about the Clinton administration or anybody else, or certainly the Republican administrations, they appoint pro-corporate judges. Even the so-called liberal judges are pro-corporate. Many companies can now come much closer to setting the terms of their relationship with employees, letting them go when they become a drag on profits, and relying on remaining workers or temporary ones when business picks up. There is no regulation. There is no union imposed rules. You can't just keep hiring permalancers. You can't just keep paying sub-minimum wages or sub-living wages. You can't keep hiring older workers and just getting, you know, fly-by-nights. In Canada, Japan, and most of Europe, corporate profits still have not recovered to pre-crisis levels. In the United States, profits have more than recovered, rising 12% since late 2007. How much do profits have to rise for corporations until they hire? Well, they will always try and hire as few people as possible. That is their mandate. And what stands between that mandate and workers getting hired and creating greater demand? Unions, period. Unions. For corporate America, the Great Recession is over. For the American workforce, it's not. Even if job growth accelerated to the rapid pace of the late 1990s and remained there, the unemployment rate would not fall below 6%, which some economists consider full employment. Of course, we had below 6% for years. Until 2016. 5 years from now. Now, he goes on to mention that, you know, some unions are bad, not great, that they cause the auto industry problems. Well, I find that very hard to believe, that it's the union's fault. Because, you know, foreign auto workers or foreign auto companies that are unionized in this country are doing fine, and we're doing fine. It seems to me more of a management problem. Are there legacy costs? Yes. But, you know, this isn't like we had no idea where these legacy costs came from. This is a simple calculation. We don't want to pay our workers more now. So we will take money, less money than they would want for raises now to keep them competitive, put it in a pension program, and calculate how much we need to put in based upon the rising stock market. And basically these managers of these pension funds at these corporations, they just didn't want to put in as much money because they wanted to pull more profits out for their shareholders. So they would just say, like, okay, well, we can expect a 10% or a 12% return on our money in the stock market, and then lo and behold, what? We can't? Of course not. Because there are many companies like AT&T, General Electric, Southwest Airlines that have thrived with unionized workers. And study after study after study after study after study, he only said study twice, has shown that unions usually do benefit workers. As the bumper sticker says, unions, the folks who brought you the weekend. And today, unions are clearly playing on an uneven playing field. Companies pay minimal penalties for illegally trying to bar unions and have become expert at doing so legally and otherwise. For all their shortcomings, union remain workers' best hope for some bargaining power. That sentence does not say this enough. Are unions flawed institutions? Yes. Compared to nothing. All institutions are flawed. There is nothing that is not flawed, folks. There is nothing perfect. Even this podcast, even this show, is flawed on occasion. So unions are the only thing that can save not just U.S. workers, all of us. We know for a fact that a unionized workforce pushes up the salary and wages for the entire workforce. Stick around. I will take your IMs just after the break for the famous Majority Report post-show, MRP, as we call it around here. Tomorrow on the show, not sure. You know what? Let's prank phone call Jessica to find out if she has a guest for tomorrow's show and blame her for the guest fiasco today. All right, folks. Oh, please, if you can get some Just Coffee, please do. And please become a member. Please,
please, please. I want to get a new microphone. I want a better microphone. That's what I want. We've hung up
sound blankets in here, drilled things into the walls. I'm going to spend like a month's worth of memberships just getting spackle for this place. All right, stick around for the post show. We're back. You know the deal here, folks. You can IM me at majority.fm. This is from last week, a virtual fence. You know that, I mean, I don't know if you remember the story, because you were like 12 when this story came out, Evan, because this story is from 2005. And I remember when they were talking about the, in fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Bush drove down to the fence, down to the border. Got to drive around in a dune buggy with a roll bar. Looked like I was tough, like a cowboy. Like a surfing, beachcombing cowboy. Department of Homeland Security Friday canceled, it was a week ago Friday, I think, a project to build a technology-based virtual fence across the southwest border, saying the effort, on which $1 billion had already been spent, was ineffective and too costly. It was supposed to cost $7 billion to cover 2,000 miles. It cost $1 billion to cover 53 miles. So if my calculations are correct, that is $2 billion per 100 miles. That is $20 billion per 1,000 miles. $40 billion per 2,000 mile. That is, let's see, a cost overrun of almost six times. And it didn't work. Are you trying to tell me, Captain, the force field seems to not be working? So, yeah, they've shut that down. God knows what the loons on the right are going to be talking about. Comcast wins approval. We'll dig into that story more as the days goes on, but... Comcast NBC Universal was approved by the FCC and the Justice Department on Tuesday, smoothing the way for the deal to close by the end of January. You know, because that's what we need. That's what we need. We need more media concentration in this company, in this country. And if we can't, and now that we've gotten to the point where you can't really concentrate the actual media outlets more, now what we need to do is concentrate the media outlets and their distribution mechanisms. So that we can get to just like basically three different companies that are responsible for distributing all media and producing all media. And we'll be able to put out like a 12K stream. You know. SEC imposed a long list of conditions on the deal. These conditions are intended to ensure that Comcast plays fair when dealing with rival programmers, cable providers, and broadband internet providers. Many of the conditions are intended to remain in place for 7 whole years.
Ooh.
Wow. 7 years. I can't even project that far into the future. Oh, my gosh. 7 whole years from now. We're all going to be riding on hovercrafts. And everything will be just like the Jetsons. Who can predict what could happen 7 years from now? Yeah, I'm sure that Comcast is going to play fair. That's what corporations always do. Mr. Copps, who voted against it, Michael J. Copps, the senior Democratic commissioner, said that Comcast-NBCU joint venture opens the door to the cableization of the open internet. What? No, no. You mean like separate channels and sort of like a closed? No, no. The potential for walled gardens, toll booths, content prioritization, access fees to reach end users, and stake in the heart of independent content production is now very real. Yeah, but we've got 7 years. Are they going to promise to play fair over those 7 years? And Comcast is being required to give up NBC's Universal Management stake in Hulu. Wow. Oh, God. Give me a break. What is the one that they have? Exacti or Exame or X something? Among the other conditions is an arbitration process in the event of disputes between Comcast and other cable providers over access to any NBC Universal's cable's channels. For 7 years. Yeah, nobody, that's not going to affect anything. Nobody in business thinks more than 7 years. No. We will be good to our word. And we will be particularly respectful stewards of the strong and iconic assets of the NBC Universal, particularly NBC News. Yeah, we'll see.
Marketplace, I was listening to last night, was making it out like, you know, we the consumer made out like a bandit.
Oh, definitely. Are you kidding? Oh, totally. Oh, totally like a bandit. Are you kidding? Of course. We're going to get... Think of all the innovation, Dorsey. They're going to figure out so many different ways to double bill us on stuff. Do they give a reason for that?
What, in Marketplace?
Yeah.
Oh, it was because the amount of time. There was 7 years for, you know, who knows what's going to happen. It's probably an advantage, you know, like, because they were so upset at all the stuff they didn't get, the merger, you know, that was a good sign that we won.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, well, you know, one thing I was thinking about when I was listening to the program was that, yeah, if it does stifle, you know, content that you watch that's on television or produced by studios and whatnot, it's going to open up, you know, the web and the stuff that, you know, kind of stuff we do to be, you know, a great alternative.
Well, so you're suggesting the worse that mainstream media becomes, the more opportunity there is for us.
Yes.
We've already reached that point. I mean, I just think that, I mean, you know, look, here's the bottom line. Look what happened to sitcoms. The sitcom just became really crappy, I think, because, well, sort of a tired format, but it became really crappy because you had studios owned by the networks. Now, it doesn't seem to have worked that way for dramas. I'm not sure why, but moving along, though, we'll see. I don't know. I'm not terribly happy about it, but it's to be expected. Now, meanwhile, that guy Matt on Twitter is still, I can't even make out now. He's tweeting me like these sort of like weird things. I called Bonaire, and now he's saying I've ratcheted up the political rhetoric by using homophobic language and calling Speaker Bonaire Boner. What is homophobic about Boner?
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And it also doesn't... He obviously didn't listen that, like, my point was is that leadership of political parties have a bigger obligation. And Boner is not a violent... If anything, Boner is like juvenile and sophomoric and silly. It's not an incitement to violence. Everyone, the Second Amendment guarantees our right for us to bear boners. Raise up your boners and attack the government. And so he's like, don't try and delete your tweets. I've saved them. And I was like, why would I? I have no intention of deleting anything. I stand by everything I said. And he goes, ah, doubling down. So what about political incitement led to violence against Giffords?
It's not political incitement. It's violent incitement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I still stand by that. Still stand by the environment that was created. This guy didn't pick, this woman is on national TV saying, I am concerned about my safety because I am being targeted. And it's creating a violent atmosphere. And if you don't think a crazy person absorbs things like a violent atmosphere, then you are crazy. And here you go again. This is just a coincidence. Incendiary device was found along the route of Martin Luther King Day parade, Spokane, Washington, likely capable of inflicting multiple casualties, the FBI said. Was found. It was some like right-wing T-shirts the guy had. In the backpacks. FBI is offering $20,000 reward for information. That was probably because some liberal probably called John Bonaire Boner, and so the guy said, I'm taking that, and I'm going to go blow up a Martin Luther King Day celebration. Now, in Britain, they seem to have the ability to call a spade, as it were. There seems to be some anger. We're not allowed to say this in America, because that's class warfare. And there was a renewed call for new taxes on the financial sector after J.P. Morgan Chase set aside almost $10 billion for paying bonuses in its investment banking division. The Robin Hood tax campaign said it was outrageous that J.P. Morgan's investment bankers are to receive a payout of $370,000 for 2010. David Hillman, spokesman, if banks can afford to pay billions in bonuses, they can clearly afford to be taxed a great deal more. That is so. Those socialists in Britain. The socialists. The communists. And all this with their inquiry into Iraq and this calling for greater taxes. J.P. Morgan Chase had declared that in their reporting season just this past week, declaring a 47% jump in profits for the last quarter of 2010. Folks, don't you see how important they are to the economy? Don't you see how much they help the economy? If we can just get them to 175% profits, for 175% jump in quarterly profits, then we will start to see maybe some jobs. And then, of course, when they get to that point, then they'll be at a point where their arbitrage and their derivatives such will have put our financial system into another precarious situation. Then the financial system will collapse again. They'll get a bunch of bailouts. They'll have to wait another year before they get massive bonuses, and we'll start this process all over again. Wonderful. Wonderful. I think I mentioned the other day that 10,000 GMAC foreclosures were basically stopped in Maryland. Did I mention this story the other day? No. Must have done it on Ring of Fire. All blending together. There was a major ruling last Friday. Coalition of nonprofit defense lawyers and consumer protection advocates in Maryland got over 10,000 foreclosure cases managed by GMAC Mortgage tossed out Because affidavits in the case were signed by Jeffrey Steven, the famous GMAC robo-signer. Who attested to the authenticity of the foreclosure documents without any knowledge about them. So, again, another story about the chain of title. In court Friday, GMAC agreed to dismiss every case in Maryland relying on a Steven affidavit, which was close to 10,000 homes. This guy was very, very busy. There's a lot of scribbling his name. They can reopen, they can refile these, but they have to do it at their own expense and subject to new Maryland regulations which require mandatory mediation between borrower and lender before moving to foreclosure. So this is a big deal because between this and the Ibanez case, there is now precedent across the country. I think I talked about this yesterday, didn't I? I did.
A little bit.
So my advice to you, if you're going into foreclosure procedure, get your lawyer to demand to see proper documentation. Robo-signers are a problem. Let's go to the IMs. Let's see. I got one more on Twitter. Let's see if this guy... Salmon considers a run against Sanders. We'll check it out. Okay. Nefertiti. Good morning. Lieberman retiring will make a bad situationist a must-have now. Well, folks, if you have not become a member, here's your opportunity to get a... For the first... It's like membership is almost free for the first 3 months. If you get it, because now you could choose, as a Majority Reporter membership, you can choose to get a Bad Situationist DVD. It's a collector's item. Stars myself, Janine Garofalo, Mark Maron, John Benjamin, David Cross, Ross Broccoli, Craig Bierko, just on and on and on.
Isn't Sarah in that as well?
Sarah Silverman. The late Robert Schimmel. Matthew. Some people know from Bad Situation, from Break Room Live and what the fuck. And it was, came out of my obsession with Joe Lieberman in the 2000 election, and it was something that I wrote and directed and shot summer of 2001. I actually wrote it 2000 to 2001. And was editing when the planes hit the towers, and the premise of the whole story was about Joe Lieberman's ne'er-do-well son became a sort of, it was inculcated by a group of religious zealots to commit a terrorist attack. Very strange movie. Not as funny as it would have been had that not happened. And not just because of the premise, but, you know, it was just sort of hard to figure out that movie. And it was just, it was tough. My wife produced the film. Not a good idea. Not a good idea. Because, you know, she was a recent girlfriend at that time. Sarah was a, well, at that time, not so recent former girlfriend. That created a little tension. That created a lot of tension. There was one, without getting into the details, I can tell you that, no, I can't. Maybe someday I'll do. But there's also extras in there, 2 hours extras. So I sell those for $25 at pilotseasondvds.com. $25. And if you become a Majority Report member, you get free access to the entire podcast, which we're going to be sequestering within weeks. And you get a free DVD or mouse pad. You got to choose. If you become a Cedarista, you get a free DVD and a free mouse pad. Or you can get 2 free DVDs. It literally takes you a half a year of, a couple months of listening as a Cedarista. And then you're a break even. Oh, my God. No wonder why I'm not making any. I think I am the worst. I'm just not good at business. I don't know what to tell you. Which, as we know, is worse than the devil. I am a suggest annotated re-release with commentary from all the major two progressives throughout the film. You know, Eric Alterman, who we'll have on this program shortly, is a big fan of the film.
Did I know that?
Yeah. Lieberman to an insurance company. Common sense, he goes for the fattest payout possible. As chairman of the Senate Homeland Security, he's unbelievable position to write his own ticket. Just watch the boondoggles. He'll dole out to as many potential suitors. His wife has been collecting insurance cash for years. That's small potatoes. Look at the airports. We'll begin installation of Northrop Grumman brain scanners in the near future. I think that's a good point, Jay Shive. I think what annoys me most about how news organs are citing Lieberman as a moderate. He ran against Weicker as a Reagan Democrat. That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. That's always been the problem with Lieberman. Weicker was a Republican who was more liberal than Lieberman. Since March 2005, Hadassah Lieberman, don't be a putz, has worked for Hill and Knowlton, a lobbying firm based in New York City, as a senior counselor at its health and pharmaceuticals practice. Don't be a push. Don't be a putz. Bush's FCC would have approved Comcast NBC by a 3-2 vote. Cops and Adelman would have voted against. Now with Obama's FCC, it passes 4-1. That's your Obama presidency in a nutshell. Commissioner Alderman was replaced by Jim Clyburn's daughter, a guaranteed servant to corporate cash. Yeah. I think that's true. Not that there's really any... 3-2 is not necessarily better than 4-1, but at least it's Bush's FCC and not Obama's FCC. But you're right. You're right. Anyone who knows anything about the Old Testament knows that Noah would have never had a restaurant. He would have had a bar or liquor store. I cannot respond to that. Media on Spokane, MLK attempt yet another unrelated incident. Exactly. Union corruption. I never hear anyone suggesting abandoned capitalism as a cure for corporate corruption. Right. That's true. We have rather limited discourse in this country, but I personally think that, well, I think we should have a socialistic capitalism. I mean, socialism seems to be more of like a sliding scale, but I'm not sure. Communism seems to be a dead letter. But I would like to see a healthy dose of socialism. Good to hear some more variety with the music today. Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit more. Kevin Semicolon and James Urbanek just tweeted, Lieberman's TV show is going to be great. Pima County Sheriff's Chief Rick, is he resigning? No. Or is he just not running for re-election?
I thought he was just not running.
That's what I thought, too.
Did you see that somebody tweeted out, I forget who it was, some media person said that Michael Steele was caught going into MSNBC on Sunday night or something like that? Like, and somebody was like, audition maybe? Like, maybe he'd be auditioning for a show or like to I would guess.
Probably. I saw him there the other day when I was in doing Rattigan on Monday.
I could see him probably being a permanent cast member on, like, Morning Joe or something like that.
Oof. Ooh.
Well, at least they'd have, you know, some more diversity, I guess. In the
yeah.
Meeting.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you see Mika go off yesterday on Sarah Palin?
I did not. You know, I didn't get a chance to catch that.
It was good. Getting it in her ear to throw to this. She's like, I don't want to show this. She's like, I don't want to give this woman any newsworthiness. Went on this rant, and Scarbo was trying to, like, calm her down, and then she kept going, and then finally, of course, she, like, you know, threw to the video.
Do you understand that, like, that ranting about Sarah Palin at this point is exactly in service of Republican establishment?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand that, like, Joe Scarborough probably says to Mika, like, hey, you should go off on Palin before the show. I just have very little doubt about it. Oh, great, I'd love to. Yeah, do it.
Well, he was trying to, he was like, you know, I'd always tell you not to do that, you know.
Right, right. No, I understand how
it comes across.
No, I understand how you do make shows, you know. I would say to Janine, make fun of how I'm stuttering. And then I'll pretend like it's making me stutter more. That's not quite true. We'd go into break and I go, why do you keep doing that? Well, it's because you stutter all the time. I know, but you make me stutter more when you do that. You've got to stop with the ahs and the ums. Janine, please. That's how it would work. That's how it would work. Steele appeared on Chris Matthews' MLK special Monday. I think it taped Sunday. No, it didn't. I don't think it taped on Sunday because everybody was there. Steele was there Monday, and there was like big deli spread in the green room, one of the green rooms, and I really thought, like, I'd like to go in there and get a goddamn free sandwich. But I don't want to do that. Heathen Steven, what was that bumper music, a French song? Couldn't tell what the dude was singing. Yes, it's C'est une poupée or something like that. It is a song by Luna on the French Romantique. This was actually, that song was how I used to end. I found that song when I was doing Bad Situationist. That was the scratch track I used to end the song. I couldn't afford it. So Dave Derby made a song that was pretty cool, sort of like that song. But I really like that song. Mark Green says, I've been working on my tell-all book about Air America. Here's a rough draft. Take a look and tell me what you think, Sam. And he links to... it's a picture of a dog. That one dog sitting on another dog with the names Mark and Sam. Dorsey, I'll send this to you. You can put it on the...
That's great.
Take a look at that. It's pretty good. Jimmy Reefer Cake. I have taken shelter from Time Warner by going all Netflix. Feels really good. Really appreciate Chris Rosen's picks that focus on Netflix. Palin's song is totally insane. Battle Hymn of Reefer Cake is next. Cable yes. TV is so full of so much garbage. There's no choices available without garbage. No choices. I would appreciate a cable channel that was sports only. Isn't that ESPN?
There's like four of those?
ESPN's 1 through 4.
Everything else I can get on Netflix. Long live Netflix. Yeah. Yeah. I watched one episode of Caprica last night.
Yeah?
Yeah. One of the five that...
Final five.
Final five. Well done. Touché. You obviously don't see... Never saw Battlestar Galactica. Or you'd know
I never did. Is Caprica the one like...
I don't even talk to you.
Okay. I thought I saw ads for it and it looked interesting, but I didn't. I remember the old Battlestar Galactica. I was very excited about that when I was a kid.
Where do you suppose Sarah Palin learned the term blood libel? This is the first time I've heard it, and I used it to think I had somewhat more extensive vocabulary than her capital. People on the right have been using it. She didn't know what it meant. She just saw it somewhere and thought it meant, like, a slander that you make against somebody being responsible for violence. There's no doubt in my mind. She knew what the word libel meant. She knew what the word blood meant. She didn't realize that, like, it was a specific thing. Now, look. I get a lot of emails claiming that I am a blood libel gatekeeper. I'm trying to hide the truth of the blood libel. Herbalaz. Will people not listen to a point of view because that person espousing that view is obnoxious? Hell yes. Of course. I was raised in a conservative household. As a teenager in the 60s, I was bombarded with rhetoric from pompous, self-righteous, and judgmental liberals who made me want to just dig in my heels and not even listen. It's not until 1980, when faced with the glaring fact that Ronald Reagan was a fraud, that I actually began to listen to those lefties around me. Also, most of those liberals in high school were kids who wanted to sit at the cool kids' table or guys who wanted to get laid by the hippie chicks. Well, I'm not saying that... I'm not saying that being obnoxious and snotty is a good way to convince people. And for my own, in my own credit, this guy was not accusing me of doing that. He didn't know me well enough to realize that after time, yes, I've become very obnoxious. He was just saying in general that that's why he didn't believe in science. And, okay, I accept the notion that you can be more persuasive with honey than you can with, what's the opposite of honey?
Oil.
What is that saying? Isn't there you can be more persuasive with honey than
vinegar?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And honey than vinegar.
Oil.
I accept that you can be more persuasive with honey than like salad dressing. But to use that as to have that level of self-awareness and say that the reason why I'm not persuaded by you has nothing to do with the facts, but that you're obnoxious. I think one has to look in the mirror and go, maybe I should examine my belief system. Maybe, and I agree. I think there is a lot of people who espouse a conservative perspective, like Rudy Giuliani type conservatives, who espouse a perspective because they don't like hippies. Or because they just like don't. I mean, yes, it is a personality defect that they can't see beyond. You know, those people. I don't want to be like ugh, like patchouli oil. Ugh. Look, nobody has a greater problem with patchouli oil than I do. I'm very sensitive to any smells that are that come from oils or perfumes or any of that. But that is not how I base my assessment of scientific reality or political realities. I don't want to hang out with hippies. I don't want to hang out with non-hippies. I don't want to hang out with anybody for the most part. I'm a relatively antisocial person. But I'm not going to base my political calculations on that. That's just the bottom line. And I understand that people do, but when you have the level of consciousness to say to someone, I don't agree with that because you're obnoxious, unless my argument is I'm not obnoxious, you should really re-examine how you're going about looking at questions of life and death for other people. Hi, Johnny. Sam, I won't be able to see the show live for the next 4 months as I'll be abroad. What? What? Why? Oh, maybe a different time. Different time? Well, we're going to miss you, Hi, Johnny. This will probably be the last time signature or zone. Well, I guess it'll be the last time we get an IM from I, Johnny, for a long time. So, you know what I wanted to do? Makes me sad, I, Johnny. I enjoyed your IMs. Did I give one of these for Jeff Pollen? I think I did, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to give another one. He knows why. Thank you, Jeff. Rusty Cole, check this out. The Republicans are claiming credit for the unemployment rate dropping, yes, from 9.7 to 9.4. I saw this. Dreyer. You know what? I saw it. I said, I don't give a shit about this.
Uh. on a hill was a lonely...
There we go. Technical difficulties. Idea.
Found it. David Dreyer. Republicans are determined to ensure that with market-oriented approach, we can have the kind of chance people... We've gotten some positive numbers because, in large part, because we've won our majority and we're pursuing pro-growth policy. Yeah. They're so despicable. They're all in a panic now because there's, you know... That's why they keep talking about jobs, because, like, oh, we got to pivot to actually give a shit about jobs for Americans as opposed to, like, the stock market and corporate profits, because those are all up. GDP. What? Rusty Cole, you should come visit me in Seattle. They have the Battlestar exhibit here at the Science Fiction Museum. I got to say that I'm not, like, you know, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan like that of anything. You know, I like the TV. I love to watch a show. I wish there were more episodes. I watch it. But I can't even tell you the name of the characters anymore. Like, all that stuff just goes right out of my head. Like, you know, like, I like baseball, but I could give a shit about meeting baseball. There's only, like, really so few. That's one of my problems. Like, politics, I don't get really terribly impressed with meeting anybody in politics, per se. I don't know what that speaks to. Like, I can't. I don't know. I think Myla is like that, too. Like, she's never had, like, a teddy bear that she cares about that much. You know, she'll go to bed with Teddy and, like, oh, we forgot Teddy. It's okay. Whatever. She doesn't care. Sammy Kammer. RFK Jr. once gave Al Franken an excellent example of how GDP is screwed up. Someone in the town near a coal power plant collapses from asthma. The ambulance ride, the emergency room treatment, prescribed inhaler all count as productivity. The cost of the pollution itself is ignored entirely. Yes, exactly. 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 Avant, I still have the last four Capricas left too, though it wasn't the greatest show. I still wanted to see how they were going to make the link to the new Cylons and destruction of Caprica. So say we all. I agree with that, Avant. Did you see what Avant did?
The transcript of the Galbraith
thing? Dude.
Fantastic.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Do we have a clip of the Galbraith interview?
We have it posted.
Oh, we do?
At the Majority Reporter's Tumblr blog.
The YouTube? Or the audio?
It's an audio.
Okay.
I'll post that on the...
Send me a link
so
that I can send it to him.
Sure. We also got, blog to add American blog. Gaius Publius, not stumbling this time, he posted your audio with the Mike Lee child labor thing about Krugman.
Is there a way for people to post, embed the audio that they can just go and do it? Mm-hmm. Do we have a link to that?
Yes.
All right. We gotta sit down with the site and really start to get aggressive with this stuff. Did you hear Rush Limbaugh go off on liberals calling us to be better than ourselves? His point was conservatives are just fine the way they are. It totally conforms with the idea that conservatives are resentful of liberals for caring and striving for something better. Yes, this is what I've said over and over and over again. Rush Limbaugh, that's what he does. He, if you have any creeping doubt that you should be doing something different, that you should be doing something other than being selfish, he will stomp that out. That's why you listen to Limbaugh. Zach Punk, I have to wonder if people's ignorance about science is worse now than it was 10, 20, 50, 100 years ago, or perhaps it simply matters more now. Did the voting populace really need to understand energy policy 100 years ago? I really don't know. I think it's worse than it probably was like 30 years ago. I think there's just sort of like a disdain now. There has been a systemic attempt to vilify the past 30 or 40 years, I think. Really, I actually think since around the Civil Rights Act, to vilify intellectualism, to promote a anti-intellectualism agenda. And part of that is because, you know, it's been going on for a long time, but this is where I think it gained sort of more traction. There was always this notion that the South had of the liberals up north coming down and telling us what to do. And
that was from the Civil War. That was with when carpetbaggers actually did come down and tell them what to do.
Yes. And some of it, like you say, may be founded in sort of, there was certainly, you know, Jewish college kids and college types coming down to the South telling us how to treat our, you know, our ends, our Negroes. And there was, you know, Nixon came out of that tradition of like feeling like he was being attacked by the intellectual elite. And that's just, you know, he'll play the battle hymn. Listen to it. Listen to the words. This battle hymn. Oh, I should tell you, a listener emailed and said that he thinks, pause it for 1 second, that if you look at the video and you can hear there's two voices, and he thinks that the guy wrote the song, sent it into one of these like places that will record a professional, you know, professionally record a song for you, and is singing along with it, which I think is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what listener it was that told me that, but
yeah, because that guy's got a great voice. You know, whoever sang that.
You know, we should do that. We should have like,
we should find out who they sent it to, and then send them our own kind of lyrics to sing.
We should just start producing songs like that. Okay, let's see.
She's a cold blast from Alaska, ingrained with common sense. She's not a Harvard lawyer, but she knew what the founders meant.
Okay, stop it for a second.
Yeah, definitely Georgia Jones.
She's not a Harvard lawyer. No, so she's pissing on the idea. Well, and I guess Obama's a Harvard lawyer. But Bill Maher had a great piece. He's like, every one of the founding fathers was a lawyer. Marilla, this thing of believing something because taste, like your friends not believing global warming, could fall into the category, Sam. Thomas Frank in What's Wrong with Kansas introduces this concept that cultural memes, like liberals drinking lattes, have entered the political discourse in the 80s and have become the reason why a lot of conservatives decided to be conservatives. Maybe Reagan and his revolution had something to do with it. I think there's something to that. Hard to hear the producer when you talk to him.
Which one of us?
Probably both of you guys.
All right, I'm on it.
And today, after school today, Evan, you're going to get Dorsey a proper cable so we can give him a proper mic.
Done and done.
I'm happy now. Jason on the thread has a mic for you. Please urge your cohorts to speak in theirs. Jason on the thread. What does that mean?
On the blog? On the
Majority FM.
Majority FM? I'll check that out.
Is it a sweet mic? I want a really... What is that mic, that $300 mic that I want? What
That's was it? Shure SM7B.
It's the one that Marin has. I want that microphone.
I posted that picture, by the way.
Yeah, that picture's hilarious.
That's not Mark Marin. That's Mark Green.
Yeah, that's
yeah, no, yeah. I know. I said that you have to listen.
Where's Marin supposed to be on my show? We're having a big falling out. Oh, you know what? Speaking of people on my show, what just happened? Is my computer on? Hello?
Hey, you've reached Jessica Madley.
Come on,
Mr. Ball. Please leave your name and phone number, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks very much for calling. Take care.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1.
Again. I wonder if she's purposely not answering the phone.
Hey, you've reached Jessica Madley. I'm sorry I missed your call. Please leave your name and phone number, and I'll get back to you as soon as...
not appropriate not to answer the phone when I call. Everybody knows that. Maybe she doesn't recognize the number.
Natalie, I'm sorry I missed your call. Please leave your name and number, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks very much for calling. Take care.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hi, Jessica. Sorry, it's Matthew Strahan from WXKLO, and unfortunately, you were not home to answer your phone. Just lost $10,000, but hey, we'll try to catch you again. We put your name and number right back into our pot, so don't worry about a thing. All righty. There's no way she's going to fall for that, right?
No.
Ha-ha, Sam.
That's what I'm going to get.
Capitalocracy. Jared Lee Loeffner appears to have been a follower of David Wynn Miller, a right-wing extremist who believes the government enslaves you through grammar and that you can avoid paying taxes by putting a colon in your name. When are you going to get him on the show? You can avoid paying taxes when you put a colon in your name?
Does that work for hyphens, too?
Send me an email. Send me a link at majorityreporters@gmail.com. I'd like to check that out.
What?
You know, my only guess is that, like, you know, if you put a colon in your name, that somehow you don't get on the tax rolls, like it screws you up.
Crashes the computers.
I have to say, and I think now, since it's 2011, and I did this in 1984.
You need me to look up statute of limitations real quick or anything?
Well, it's not that big a deal. But when I went to college in Connecticut, the drinking age was 18 or 19, and it was they were just raising all the drinking ages, and Connecticut was one of the last states to do it. And I came in, and I'm trying, you know, they gave you this, like, fill out your data entry form and fix anything that's wrong on it that they put into the computers. And, you know, things weren't that computerized at that time. And so you got our data entry card, and my birthday was, like, I changed, like, my birthday's in 1966. I changed the 66 to, like, 65, and maybe I changed the month from 11 to 1, okay? So it's like, oh, someone would put it in and think, like, oh, this is not an error. And so I wasn't eligible to drink, but I caught the wave as Connecticut was going up, and my college ID, I was legal. So I got to drink at the college bar. And because somebody just, you know, some dude was just, you know, part-time workers putting data entry in there, just sees the card, you know, adds the address, and, oh, I got to change. Beep, 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 and that was it. And I was in the system forever like that. So maybe that's the idea. If you put a colon in your name, you don't have to pay taxes. Steal Marin's mic, says Film Fest guy. I can't, because it's the one that he has in his garage I want.
You invite him over here to do the show. Meanwhile, you're on a plane to L.A.
Oh, brilliant. 6482. Oh, what? Click, hello? Mark, yeah, where are you? You're in my office. Dude, I'm in your garage right now. I thought I was coming to you. You got to be shitting me. Oh, okay. And then I get a call from him the next week. Sam, where's my mic? Wait, didn't you say, take my mic? No. I said, we'll do it a different time. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. 6482, number. Hey, why the jealousy? You are always better than Marin. Well, that's exactly it. I'm not jealous of Marin. I'm jealous of the fact that he has a microphone. Always better than him. Why don't I have a better microphone?
Kyle's weighing in saying it is a nice microphone.
Dr. Kathy says, FUBAR, get as many aliases as possible. I'm not sure I know what that means.
Morella, Marin is having a live chat with his podcast fans today using the Sammy Cam concept. You should complain of plagiarism. When? Send me a link. This is bullshit. You people better head over there and do something about this. Ask him why he's... Oh. Marin's on Conan this Thursday night. Where is Conan? Oh, it's in L.A. Okay, we've run out of time, folks. All right, folks, please, if you can become a Majority Report member, please do. DOSing. Okay, Morella. And make sure that you buy your coffee from Just Coffee. I'm such a great spokesman. Talk to you tomorrow.